Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Okay, everyone, sorry about that technical issue. Today, my very special guest is Orin J. Sofer, and we will be talking about his new book, Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. We spend so much of our lives talking to each other, but how much are we simply running on automatic, relying on old habits and hoping for the best? Are we able to truly hear others and speak our mind in a clear and kind way without needing to get defensive or go on the attack? In this groundbreaking synthesis of mindfulness, somatics, and nonviolent communication, Orin J. Sofer offers a simple yet powerful practices to develop healthy, effective, and satisfying ways of communicating. Orin has practiced Buddhist meditation since 1997, and in the early 2000s, he developed a deep interest in the relationship between contemplative practice and communication. Today, his work integrating relational awareness into the field of communication stands at the cutting edge of interpersonal studies. You can find out more by visiting Orin's website, which is orinjsofer.com, and that's orinjaysofer.com. And so with that, I'd like to welcome Orin to the show. Good day, sir.
Thanks so much for having me here, Robert.
Well, it's my pleasure. And, you know, we spend so much of our time communicating. But whether it's effective or not, that's always seems to be the big key here. So I'm happy to be able to talk today and maybe give our listeners some ideas on more effective communication. So, I'd like to start with a little bit about yourself, and kind of, your journey and what has led you up to this particular point, in doing what you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started this journey by getting involved with meditation when I was quite young. I was about 19. Kind of dealing with ordinary 19-year-old stuff, parents getting divorced, falling out with friends, feeling lost, and kind of a lot of angst about, what am I going to do with my life sort of questions. And so I started meditating and found a lot of support through the practice of contemplation. But what I noticed after a few years was that some of the very beautiful aspirations and values of the meditation practice, like kindness and patience and clarity or wisdom, would be accessible and available when I was meditating by myself. But if I had a disagreement with a coworker, or if I went home for the weekend to visit my family, all of that stuff would kind of fly out the window very quickly. And so I realized, okay, there's a gap here, and I need something to help translate these values from the meditation practice, not just into my life, but into my conversations. And that's when I came across the work of a man named Dr. Marshall B. Rosenberg, who was the founder of a system of communication called nonviolent communication, which is a very powerful systematic training of our attention to learn how to focus on specific aspects of our experience that help us understand one another and collaborate together better. So that's kind of how I got involved with this.
Wow. So the book, Say What You Mean, how did that come about? What was the inspiration
yeah.
of that particular?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there were a few different inspirations for that. You know, I'd been practicing and teaching this stuff for over a decade, and I noticed the same gap basically in both communities. So in other words, in the mindfulness world and the world of meditation and contemplative practice, there is still this big gap for people who are really devoted to self-exploration, self-knowledge, growth, and beautiful values, but lacking in tools to bridge that into their conversations. And so I wanted to provide something to help people do that process of translation that I had been engaged with in my own practice for so long. But then I also noticed, quite interestingly, in the communication world, whether it's nonviolent communication or mediation or other forms of communication techniques, that people were missing the key ingredient in transforming their communication habits of self-awareness in order to be able to use the communication tools effectively, even just to remember them in the moment that we need them. We need a certain amount of mindfulness. We need to have that basis of inner awareness. So the book on one level was meant to kind of provide this missing piece to both of those communities. And then more broadly speaking, just recognizing the role that communication plays in all of our lives. I mean, we are communicating every day, all day long, in every area of our life, whether we're talking about at home, with family, roommates, housemates, at work, even when we're alone, we're communicating with ourselves, thinking, online, social media, texting. So I wanted to provide some real concrete tools for people to see changes in their life in this really crucial area that has so much to do with our level of happiness and satisfaction in life, the quality of our relationships, not to mention our professional success. So much of our ability to advance in our career depends on our relationship and communication skills.
Exactly. And, you know, the as you were outlining the degree to which we communicate, you know, daily, you know, from others to even self, you know, communicating with self. I mean, it's amazing that there is this huge force that really affects us so dramatically, and yet so many do ineffectively. You know, I mean, it's stunning when I say something to someone, and then they, you know, I get an odd reaction, and then we'll find out that, you know, it wasn't heard as the way I thought it was said. So I mean, the idea of being heard correctly, you know, or with intent, and we can talk a little bit about that in a little bit. But it's just amazing that you know, actually by shifting our communication, really we'll shift our lives, and relationships,
right,
and that kind of thing.
That's right. And you know, as I learned about just even the possibility of communication training, like that this is actually an area that we can develop skills in, I was astounded. Like, how is it that I've been through, you know, whether it's 12 years of compulsory education or 4 years of secondary education, and I haven't received like one class on how to communicate with other human beings? You know, it's amazing. We put children in our society through 12 plus years of schooling, and we don't give them any tools or training in communication, given how essential it is to our life. It's remarkable.
Exactly. And, you know, bringing it current, you know, with the idea of texting and social media and that kind of thing, I think, you know, in curriculum, you know, nowadays, that it would be a very beneficial, you know, I mean, in addition to learning communication skills,
right,
But I mean, it would be something that they could, you know, apply immediately, you know, when you kind of enter into that realm.
Yeah, there's no dearth of opportunities to practice with communication.
Exactly. So one of the principles in the book is that there are three steps to effective communication or conversation: presence, curiosity, and care. And focusing on what matters. So can you talk a little bit about, because I think, you know, it would be helpful to get an idea for listeners to recognize effective conversation.
Yeah, sure. So let's start with the first one. So the first step to having more meaningful conversations is to do something that I call leading with presence, which means that before anything else, before what we say, how we're feeling, what happened, what we'd like from the other person, we take the time to actually show up and be fully present. And we train ourselves to sustain that level of awareness and presence during a conversation. And this has a lot of really powerful benefits and effects in a conversation. So part of what makes us human is that we are social creatures. We relate to one another. We constantly want to know where we stand in the social hierarchy. We're checking one another out. And we feel emotions in relation to one another. We have this capacity for empathy. So when we're having a conversation with somebody else and they're not actually fully present, they're distracted, they're doing something else, maybe they're on their phone, but even in more subtle ways, if we just have the sense that their mind is somewhere else, we pick up on it and we feel it. And it's harder to understand one another and develop connection and move any situation or issue forward. You just kind of consider for a moment how many misunderstandings and arguments and difficulties we've each had in life simply because someone wasn't paying attention. So the opposite of that is learning how to bring a wholehearted awareness and presence to one another in a conversation. And this has a really powerful effect. When someone really shows up, when you see and sense that they're listening, that they're available, that they're present, that communicates something very important. It says to the other person, "You're worth my time. This conversation is important enough to me that I'm actually going to put other things aside and give you my full attention." Now, that's the first condition, the fundamental prerequisite for having an effective conversation is this level of willingness to be here and actually engage. So that's about leading with presence. And there are a host of other benefits that come along with that. Like we pick up on more in the conversation when we're actually here. We get more information, not just about the other person, but also about what's happening for ourselves, which means that if we get reactive, if we start feeling defensive, instead of acting that out and saying or doing something that we're going to regret later, we get the signals inside about what's happening and we can navigate, we can make a different choice. So one of the other principles here that's tied up with this first step is that the more aware we are in a conversation, the more choice we have. It's that simple. So this is the first step to having more effective and meaningful conversations. And it's something that takes practice, that we can actually train ourselves in, taking a pause before we speak, slowing down a little bit, or seeing if there's a way to relax and feel our body in the conversation is a great way to bring more presence and awareness into the conversation. So let me pause
you know,
here and see if you want to comment.
Well, I was going to say yes. You know, the idea of being present, I think even I think if you were to do that, you know, and it was something that you maybe didn't do previously, but you start, you know, doing that, being present, you know, in conversations, that the people who you normally interact with, I would think, would just sit up and take notice. Because I think a lot of people practice or you know, focus on being present. I mean, because I think maybe that's what leads to a lot of, you know, miscommunication, you know, in the fact that someone is really not listening, you know, presently to what was being said.
Yeah, completely, completely. And it's something that we can all improve at.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's for sure. You know, that's one thing that it's a never-ending practice.
Right.
I think being human nature, you know, adrift into the past or to the future, you know, while in a conversation is, I don't know, it just seems it's part of human nature, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
But we kind of, but we can, like you say, you know, practice it and be better at being present.
That's right. So then the second step, so if we're present, if we're learning how to be more fully aware in a conversation, getting more information, having more choice, more flexibility in the conversation, that gets us on the map. That kind of opens the ground for actually connecting and understanding one another. Then the next step is, as you said, to come from curiosity and care. So this is about our intention. And what I love about talking about this factor in effective conversations is that it's one of the ones that often gets overlooked. Particularly in communication training, we can give so much attention to, well, how do you say this? And can I say this? And what words would I use here? And we forget that so much of human communication is actually nonverbal. It's in the tone of voice. It's in our facial expressions or our gestures or our body language. So, you know, you can use the most beautiful, flowery, clear language, you know, in the world. And if your intention is off, if you're trying to blame someone or get your way at any cost, doesn't matter. The other person's going to feel that. They're going to sense it. And it's going to be a barrier in the conversation. So instead, we can actually develop the capacity to be more conscious of our intentions. Where are we coming from? Are we coming from an intention that's actually going to help us to work together, to develop trust, mutual understanding, so that instead of a difference or a conflict being something between us, an obstacle, it becomes a puzzle that we're both looking at together. And that's a huge shift in any relationship or conversation when we can actually be on the same team looking at a problem together and say, look, how are we going to work this out? And one of the major ways of doing that is through our intention, because that's going to animate all of those nonverbal cues and signals. The tone, the facial expression, the body language, and other folks are going to pick up on that. So coming from curiosity and care means that we're genuinely interested in understanding the other person's experience, their perspective, and in finding something that works for both of us. That we recognize, you know, when I just go about my life trying to get my way, there's a cost that works to a certain degree. If we have the power or the resources to do that, but we have to pay a price. We lose a certain number of relationships. We lose a quality of trust and goodwill in the relationships that we do have, and the results actually suffer. We have less access to creativity and other people's ideas if we're just focused on getting our way.
Definitely. You know, one of the things that you know, the idea of going into a conversation with, you know, with intention. I don't know how many people take that the time to do that step, you know, to recognize an intention. And you're right. I mean, it comes through loudly in all the different ways, from words to gestures. And so, yeah, that's, I think one of the things hopefully listeners will get from today's show is to recognize, you know, the importance of intention when it comes to conversations, either initiating or even if a conversation was initiated, is to look at the intention behind it.
Right. And, you know, I enjoy your comment there, Robert, because part of this that you're pointing to is a much broader sense. So when I say come from curiosity and care, like I'm highlighting two very specific intentions that that I see as a default. It's like when you're not sure, you can always fall back on being curious. Or trying to be kind, you know, being connected to just that sense of basic goodwill in your heart. Now, there are a lot of other intentions we can have in conversations that are also very helpful, whether it's being patient, collaborating, working together, and so forth. And as you note, as you point out, if we take the time to actually stop and look and inquire, okay, what is my intention? That can start to shape things in a more helpful way. You know, I'd love to tell a short story about this. Do we have a minute for that?
Please do. Yeah, we do.
Great. So this is a story that I tell in the book that I came across when I was doing research, and it's the story of a guy named Darryl Davis. Who grew up overseas. His dad was in the military and then moved to the United States when he was younger, when he was about 10. African-American kid, and at the age of 10 had his first experiences of racism in the United States with his Cub Scout troop. And he was totally baffled because he had grown up outside of the country up to that point, and he couldn't understand, how can people hate me if they don't know me? And that became a very important question for him in his life. Later in life, he met a member of the KKK while he was playing a gig down south. He's a jazz musician. And they started talking. And through their relationship, so Darryl, with this kind of very powerful curiosity and a real commitment to showing respect to all human beings, engaged this man in conversation over time, and they became friends. And over the course of their relationship, just through the force of Darryl's goodwill, kindness, and genuine curiosity, his genuine intention to connect and understand, this man changed his views, ended up leaving the KKK. And not only that, Darryl got so interested and he decided to write a book about the KKK, and through this one relationship ended up interviewing many, many members of the organization in this one area in Southern Maryland. And through his conversation, between 40 and 50 members of the KKK ended up leaving the organization. And so this is the power of really coming from a clear, strong intention. It really can affect our relationships and conversations in a positive way.
Wow, yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot of courage, you know, when it came to, you know, to doing it, to having that conversation.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, and wow. So, and I like the idea of you having curiosity and care as being intentions, you know, mm-hmm. you know, for me, you know, to... I guess use the term reset or to set, you know, an intention and going in. To me, curiosity and care really would help keep me present, I would think, you know, for, mm-hmm. you know, for me personally.
Yeah, absolutely. You're pointing to something important, which is that, you know, so there are these three steps to the conversations that I talk about: lead with presence, come from curiosity and care, and then the last one that we'll get to, focus on what matters. And we can learn them as a sequence, as discrete kind of principles and trainings, but over time, they all support each other. It's like the more focused we are on what matters, the easier it is to get curious. And as you said, the more we're connected to curiosity and care, that helps us to stay present. So they all support each other.
Oh, I can see where that would be the case. And by putting attention to either of those, the presence, the curiosity, the care, or focusing on what matters, any one of those, I think once you start that, then the others, like you say, are... integrate or intertwined. You know, they kind
right.
of, like you say, support each other. So, so now that third step, focus mm-hmm. on what matters. Is that now we're talking about during the conversation? After we go into a conversation and being present. So focus on what matters. And I would think that being present would help bring out the important aspects, you know, or what matters, so to speak.
Yeah, it certainly points us in the right direction. So this aspect of the model is the specific training in the components of nonviolent communication. And so this is about what we do with our attention. What do we focus on? Where do we place our attention? And it's not only in a conversation. It's actually, in some sense, maybe even more importantly, what we do with our mind. And that includes before the conversation, after the conversation. So our habit is to focus on our beliefs, our views, opinions and judgments, particularly if someone's doing something that we disagree with or don't like. Most of us, the way that we have been conditioned and trained, is that if somebody is doing something that we don't like, blame them. There's something wrong with you. You should do it differently. Why are you doing it that way? And this is a very counterproductive strategy. You know, one of the examples that I give is, say the classic roommate example, one person's messier than the other person's neater than the other. So, and then, you know, the classic argument ensues with each person blaming the other about how they're doing it wrong. And so when we step back and actually look at the logic there, we see how faulty it is. It's like, if I want somebody to do something differently, I want them to change their behavior or reconsider their approach to something, how useful is it to go about telling them everything that's wrong with them and blaming them? Like, when has that ever produced willing, joyful change and listening in a conversation, right? Rarely. So the shift here is to actually learn how to pay attention to our experience in a different way and to identify what actually matters. And so what does that mean? So at the heart, it means that we are looking for the deeper human needs or values that are connected to the situation. And there's a core principle here that comes out of humanistic psychology, work of Carl Rogers, Abraham Maslow, which is that as human beings, we all share the same basic fundamental needs not just for physiological support, but needs for community, belonging, for understanding, for love, for recreation and rest and play, as well as what we might call higher needs or even spiritual needs for things like meaning or transcendence or peace or beauty. So human beings all share these fundamental needs and we are motivated by them. So everything we do in life can be seen, can be understood as an attempt to meet some deeper need. Now, this sounds very kind of obvious on the surface if you just step back and look at it, but the implications are vast because when we focus on what matters, when we actually listen and look for, okay, what do I need here? What does this other person need? What's important to us? It provides the space for us to really understand one another, because at that level, we have more in common than we have that separates us. So our conflicts tend to occur on the level of what we call our strategies, our positions, our ideas for what we want and how we're going to get it. But if we just stay at that level, your strategy might not agree with my strategy, and then we're just in this battle. But if we can identify why we want those things that we want, what matters about that to you, now we can actually start to understand one another. And perhaps more importantly, when we identify what we actually need, instead of being fixated on just one thing, there's a whole world of possibilities that open up. So, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, that that area of going from what we need to strategies or implementation and how to meet those needs, you know, that the idea of strategies is where things, you know, tend to go their own way often, you know, so that so when someone is in the conversation and, you know, you're at a point, you have identified mutual needs, and then you get to the point of trying to identify a strategy, how what's the best way to minimize that potential of conflict, you know, and or let me do it from the positive. What's the best way to maximize that the needs of all will be met?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a great question. I want to maybe just give an example first of what we mean by the difference between a strategy and a need, so folks can kind of get their head around it. So one of the classic examples that I like to use is somebody smoking a cigarette. And so this is an actual real story of someone who did a workshop and, you know, went afterwards to light up a smoke and stopped and said, well, why am I doing this? If this is a strategy, what do I need? And they realized, oh, I want to relax. I want to break. I want to take my mind off things. And so as soon as they identified what they actually needed, relaxation, space, ease, they realized, wow, I have got far better ways to relax and take my mind off things than destroying my health. So this is the difference between a strategy and a need. Is the strategy is only just one idea, just one option. And the need is at a deeper level. It's what we're actually after. And when we can identify that, there's a lot more room to be creative. So how do we work together and not get locked into the strategies? There's a few different levels here. One is it's important to take the time to develop as much mutual understanding as possible. It's not just a cognitive exercise of, okay, what do you need? You need this. Okay, here's what I need. There's actually a felt shift in the heart that's required to really understand, oh, this is what's important to you. It's like, if you can't get behind it, if you can't say yes to it for the other person, then you're not actually at that level of what we mean when we say a deeper human need. So it has to be something that we actually want the other person to have, that we support for both of us. So in that process of really trying to hear and understand one another, a few things happen. One, we develop more trust. There's that sense of as we understand one another, we start to see what we have in common and the possibility that, you know, I care about what's important for you also. It's not just about what's important for me. So that there's this sense of not just meeting my needs and not just meeting your needs, but how do we meet all of the needs that are present? And this is a radical shift from the way things usually go. So our whole society is kind of structured around an either or paradigm. It's a win-lose model, and the person with more power wins. So these tools are actually very countercultural. They're opening up the possibility of saying, what if instead we said, look, we're both here on the planet. We got to find a way to live together. How are we going to share resources to meet as many needs as possible? That's the orientation. That's the aim. So it's a both and. So over the course of developing understanding, we also develop trust. And then in looking at strategies, one of a few things may happen. Sometimes when we really understand each other, the person who's in the most pain, who has the higher need, there's a sense of, there's a kind of natural movement of compassion towards that person. And one person in the dialogue ends up shifting. They say, wow, if that's what's actually going on for you, okay, like, you know, like, let's figure this out, because what I was thinking and what I was wanting, actually, you know, I really see how I can work with what you're wanting now that I actually understand why it's important to you. So that's one possibility, is that one person in the dialogue shifts. Another possibility is how do we frame the question, which is, what's going to work for both of us? How can we meet as many needs as possible? So the way that we look at the question is really important. The last possibility is that if we can't find a strategy, right? If we can't find something, now what we're actually dealing with is less a conflict, it's a crisis of imagination. It's that we're actually not finding the creativity to discern a solution that will meet as many needs as possible. And then we can still be connected. There can be a sense of, you know, regretting or mourning. Wow, you know, we really see each other. We understand this. We'd like to work it out, and we can't find a solution. That's a very different outcome than to heck with you. You know, I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah. One of the, when it comes time to, recognizing the needs, and maybe, you know, getting to that point where one person shifts, you know, because of maybe being present and being, you know, more aware of, excuse me, the other individual's perspective. What if you have a situation where you have a kind of a reluctant participant in the conversation? I can understand, you know, going through and doing a lot of initiation, but a conversation is a two-way
exactly
street. So would it be just by maybe being more present and attentive to the individuals that maybe a reluctance would diminish?
Well, it really depends on the situation and the person, of course. But the idea, the aim, right, is that we are, we're not giving up what matters to us over what matters to the other person. And we're not, we're stepping out of that either or situation. And so I think it's a matter of being willing to persist and to stay engaged and say, listen, you know, I see what matters to you, and that's important to me. I want to figure that out. And this other thing is important to me, and what you're asking for, the way it looks right now is not going to work for me. And here's why. I have a few other ideas. Can we keep looking at this? So there's the sense of, when we have these tools, we're kind of playing two different roles. On the one hand, we're playing the role of advocating for ourselves and staying connected to our own needs and or whatever we're representing in that conversation. But we're also a little bit playing the role of the facilitator, where we're holding both of us and the conversation and the other person together and saying, look, I don't want to just push for my way here, and I don't want to give up what's important to me. I really want to work this out together. And there's something about persisting with that that often has an effect. When the other person really trusts that we're not just trying to get our way, that we genuinely want this to work for them, usually there's a shift, because they don't need to resist or defend or protect themselves, because there's no force being applied against them. So there's nothing that they need to resist against. So there can then be, then there can then be space.
Yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense. As far as disabling that, well, gosh, we're already down to the last few minutes here, Orin.
I was going to say, so maybe in the last few minutes, I could tell one more short story that I think would illustrate some of the power of those tools.
That would be great.
Okay. So particularly looking at a situation where it's like, we can't agree, right? Well, what if we can't agree? So there were some women on both sides of the abortion issue that met at a protest. And they were, you know, yelling across the picket line, and a few of them connected and said, "This is crazy. You know, we're not going to get anywhere just yelling and screaming at each other." So they exchanged numbers, and they, a small group of women from each side of the issue, started meeting, getting together, getting to know one another, and really trying to understand one another, really looking at, well, what matters to you about this position? Why do you have this view? And they got to know one another on a personal level too. They got to know each other's families. Now, after a number of months, something very interesting happened. None of them changed their views. There was no agreement about whether, you know, about abortion law or, you know, the right to reproductive rights or so forth. But what happened was, when the group that did not favor abortion heard through the grapevine that somebody was planning on coming to that, to their town, to bomb an abortion clinic, they got together and talked about it, and they sent a very clear message back, and they said, "You are not welcome in our community. Do not come." Now, to me, that's a success of these tools, because it shows that there was enough mutual understanding and respect that they were no longer willing to use violence as a strategy to meet their needs. And just imagine in the world today, even if we can't disagree, even if we can't agree on a strategy, if there was that level of understanding and connection that we were no longer willing to use violence.
Boy, that is so, yeah, that would be so wonderful, you know, to see that work out on the global stage. So, it would be, well, Oren, this has really been a great conversation. I appreciate you spending your time talking to us about Say What You Mean. And now, if people want to get in touch with you, is it through the website the best way?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. My website, orinjsofer.com, is one great way. The other great way is actually through my email newsletter. I send out one or two emails a month with a link to a free event or an article or talk that I've written or given. And when you join the email list, you get a free guided meditation series and a short ebook on meditation practice. And there's a super simple way to do that right from your phone. You just send a text message to the number 44222 and put one word in the text message. You put the word guided, G-U-I-D-E-D, like guided meditation. So if you just text that word guided to 44222, it'll walk you through the steps to sign up for my email list, and then we'll be in touch.
Well, that sounds great. That's easy enough. Boy, you made it really simple for people. That's great. Well, again, thank you, Oren, for your time. I really appreciate you talking with us, and I've gone through and I have a little tab on the section about useful communication phrases that you have in your book. Those are some really good questions. I mean, you know, when you don't know what to ask. So.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks so much for having me on the show, Robert. It's been a real pleasure.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Oren J. Sofer. We've been talking about his new book, Say What You Mean, A Mindful Approach to Nonviolent Communication. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is orinjsofer.com, and that's orinjaysofer.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.